For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
I wanted to share some thoughts from John 15, verse 2, on pruning. Jesus says, "Every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will be even more fruitful." So the thing to notice here is that this branch does bear fruit, and that the process of pruning that Jesus takes us through is to make us even more fruitful. And we know this as God's hand of breaking in our lives. You know, one of the questions that we often ask ourselves is, you know, how does he go about pruning us in our lives? I think the first thing is that he continually transforms our character, especially in areas where we thought we have gained victory. And often he targets these areas because he's looking for a new time or a new ministry opportunity that lays in the future. And he knows that if he doesn't prepare us by pruning us in our lives in this area that we've struggled with for many years, that we may not be effective in that ministry. I think back to my own life, and there are many different times where God has pruned me in my life. But most recently, the most memorable time of pruning that I've experienced was about 2 years ago. It was actually when I was nominated to be an elder. And as you know, there's like a 6-month period of testing. And during that time, it was very difficult because I was teaching CT regularly. I was teaching a class every week. I was leading a sphere of over 500 people. I had a newborn son at home. And I was just in way over my head. I was under tremendous pressure. And I would be walking into, you know, a prep session for class, and I would feel bad about myself, like my contribution wasn't good enough. Felt like I was just limping into things. You know how that feels? Not to mention, at that time, God was really pressing in on character issues that I thought I had gained victory in. You know, ever since I was young, I remember having an anger problem. And as a young Christian, I would just explode in the ministry house. And faithful brothers would come up to me and confront me in my life. People who cared enough to say something. And early on, I gained tremendous victory over this area that plagued my life. But during this testing period, it came back up. I went on vacation that summer. And I was arguing over something really petty with one of the guys that was with us on vacation, and it turned into this huge argument, and I lost my temper in front of a bunch of people, and I was embarrassed. And so when I finally came home, I decided that I was going to go before the elders and tell them what had happened. I was so ashamed. And when I sat across the room from these guys, I told them what had happened. I actually thought about telling them that I wanted to withdraw my nomination. I said, you know, maybe this is the Lord speaking here. And one of the older brothers spoke up and said, "Now you know that you didn't nominate yourself, right? We nominated you. If we want to withdraw your nomination, we will." And he said, you know, maybe what God is doing here is that he's preparing you for another aspect of your life here. You're a new dad. And it'd be devastating if you just lost your temper on your kid. And it could cause you effectiveness. It could cost you effectiveness in the future. And at that moment, I just sensed that God was speaking directly to me, saying, "I'm preparing you. I'm doing this because I love you. I care about you." Some of you right now are going through painful breaking. God is pruning an area in your life. Maybe an area that you thought you'd gain victory over. But maybe the reason he's doing that is he's preparing you for something that he has in store for you in the future. And my challenge to you is to not say no. Say yes to God. Another thing that God does in pruning us is he tries to break us of sinful attitudes that we have in ministry. One of the first things that comes to my mind when it comes to sinful attitudes that we often have in ministry is taking our identity from the success that we have in our ministry. So easy to do that. We live in a culture where success is highly prized. And it's very easy to take that thirst for success that we apply to every area of our lives and just apply that to our ministry. I love the way that Tim Keller puts it. He says in his book, Counterfeit Gods, the main sign that we're into success idolatry is that we find we cannot maintain our self-confidence in life unless we remain at the top of our chosen field. Chris Everett was a leading tennis player in the 70s and 80s. Her career win-loss record was the best of any singles player in history. But as she contemplated retirement, she was petrified. She said to an interviewer, "I had no idea who I was or what I could be away from tennis. I was depressed and afraid because so much of my life had been defined by being a tennis champion. I was completely lost. Winning made me feel like I was somebody. It made me feel pretty. It was like being hooked on a drug. I need the wins. I need the applause in order to have an identity." You could just insert my career. You could just insert school achievement. You can just insert ministry success as a replacement to tennis. So easy to do that. The real insidious thing about putting our identity in ministry success is that it's under the guise of serving the Lord. And yet we're really trying to feed our own ego. The real tragic thing is when we hit those rough patches in ministry, if you've been serving the Lord long enough, you're going to hit that. And when the ministry success dries out, and you're unable to look to your ministry in order to feed that thirst for success, you're going to look elsewhere, to your career, to something else, to the applause of your boss. You know, here's some signs that you're taking your identity from ministry success. The fear of being viewed as a failure. How many of us are making ministry decisions, leadership decisions, because we are afraid of being viewed as a failure? There are glaring problems in our group that we know we should address, but we know that if we tell our sphere leader or if we tell people about what's really going on, we're going to expose ourselves to being criticized as a bad leader. And we're just unwilling to do that. And so we'd rather maintain the status quo. We'd rather let the people whom God has entrusted to us suffer. What about being resentful or cynical of others' success? I have to admit, I feel this sometimes. Even in a fruitful field like the college ministry. You hear about dozens of salvations happening in a group. And isn't it telling that our first inclination is for us to be envious of that? We can't even be happy of people coming to Christ. Or we may even question the validity, the genuineness of God's work in that group. You know, we see these emails of salvations. It's easy sometimes to be like, just tired of hearing that. That's a sad state of where our heart is at. It shows that our ego is so tied up with our own ministry success that we can't be happy for others. We can't be happy that God is using people in a powerful way unless it includes us. What about a competitive spirit? Of course, we're mature enough. We're not going to boast openly. Some of us aren't smart enough to do that, I guess. But most of us know that we're not supposed to do that out loud. But secretly, we nourish this competitive spirit. It's one of the motivations that we have in leading and doing ministry. is to show that we're successful or that we're good enough. What about a thirst to amass more and more ministry? In our field, you see this typically where people are continually getting more and more disciples. You know, sometimes you'll see a guy with sitting there with five disciples and he's vying to get yet another disciple. Sometimes I joke with my leaders who, you know, are sitting with like four or five disciples, can barely manage meeting with all of them. I say, Lord, now that you've called the 12, when are you going to die for us? When will you come into your kingdom? I think the other question we should be asking ourselves is, how should we respond to God's pruning hand in our lives? I've been thinking a lot about a familiar passage, been seeing it in a new light. Romans 12:1, where Paul says, therefore, I exhort you, brothers and sisters, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a sacrifice, alive, holy, and pleasing to God, which is your reasonable service. You know, when we teach this, typically we say that this is a passage about the second decision, where you decide that you're going to give everything, your entire life over to God. And many of us know that exact moment when it happened, where we were agonized over a decision that God was calling on us for, and we remember sitting almost visually across the table from God, sitting there with everything that we really cared about, everything that mattered in our lives, standing before us and sitting there in deadlock. Am I going to give this over to you? And then finally just pushing it all away and saying, okay, have it. But the second decision really is the first of many decisions that we make. I think the mistake we often make is that the second decision is just a one-time event and we never have to go back to it. But how many of us dealing with our current health problems knew when we were making the second decision that that was entailed in the second decision? How many of us, when we made the second decision, gave our future children's lives over to God? There's no way that we could have anticipated all the things that would show up in our lives when we made the second decision. And so, as we move on in our Christian lives, after making the second decision, we have to continually give things over to God. And if we don't, it can actually have catastrophic results. In verse 2, Paul says, do not be conformed to this present world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may test and approve what is the will of God, what is good and well-pleasing and perfect. This word conformed is very interesting. In Greek, it's the word schematizo. This is actually the where we get the word schematic from. And it's interesting because it's in the passive imperative, which means that don't allow yourself to be schematized according to the pattern of this world. In other words, you don't have to pursue the world to become conformed to its patterns. It's pursuing you. Don't worry about it. It's actively pursuing you. And he says, instead, be transformed, which in Greek is the word metamorphao. It's where we get the word metamorphosize from. And again, it's in the passive imperative, which means instead, allow yourself to be metamorphosized, to be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And so what this suggests is that there's really two routes that you can choose before you. God might be trying to prune you in your life, and you have one of two decisions. Either you allow him to transform you, or you allow yourself to be conformed to this world. Another way to render this is, don't be schematized according to the pattern of this world, but instead be metamorphosized by the renewing of your mind. You're either going backward or you're going forward. If you refuse to say yes to God in transforming your life, You're moving away from him and being conformed to this world. Some of us have been saying no to God for a while now. You know, maybe it's specifically that God is calling on us to love the people in our group, but we've refused, we've quit. It's been a long time since we've actually loved the people whom he's put in our lives. You know, we're starting to get interested in our career more and more because that's where the action is. And really, we're just a placeholder in our leadership team. We know it in our own hearts. We've stopped caring. And there's a danger there. If we don't say yes to God and start loving our people like he wants us to, we could end up being conformed to the world. We might end up losing it. For some of us, it's our marriage. God is putting his finger on that specific area of our lives. For some of us, it's that God is calling on us to be emotionally engaged with our wives, to maybe even raise the tension in an area that we know needs to be addressed in her life, but we're too afraid. We'd rather just accommodate because it's easier. It's more comfortable. For some of us, it means not being resentful toward our husband, being thankful for him. Some of us have been saying no so long in the area of our marriage that we've actually nourished secret fantasies of being with somebody else. You know, others of us are just disappointed with our lives, the way it turned out. And we're refusing to be thankful for what God has given to us. We dreamt about how our lives would be like 20 years ago, and now we look at our own lives and we're disappointed. We're unhappy. And, you know, we think to ourselves, I've sacrificed all of these things, and yet this is what God has given to me? That's a dangerous position to be in. You know, one of the things that's been really troubling to me over the last couple years is to hear about the growing list of names of people who I admired as like heroes of the faith when I first started coming around, who now are no longer leading for God, and in some cases are far away from him. It's sad. Grieves me. I was just hanging out with one of those guys a couple weeks ago. You know, a guy who everybody that I talked to was regarded as hardcore for God, sacrificed so much, was real fruitful. And now his heart is far away from God because he continually said no to him about a specific area that he was struggling in. And, you know, talking to him, all he wanted to talk about was his commissions at work that he was getting, his different hobbies. You could tell that that was what he was excited about. Eventually, we started talking about spiritual things, but he would always talk about things in the past tense. And I remember when we bought our house, we bought this house because it had a huge driveway. You could fit 10 cars in this driveway. It was perfect for home church. I remember 20 years ago sitting at a fire with a bunch of people in fellowship, and it was so sweet. All of these things that he was describing 15, 20 years ago. But there was nothing that he could say about the present day or the future that he was excited about. That's scary. I didn't walk away from there with smug self-righteousness looking down upon him. I thought to myself, that could be me. And that could be you. If God is calling on you to repent, to allow him to work in your life to prune you, and you're saying no, it's not that you're forfeiting further effectiveness from God. You may be forfeiting bearing fruit at all. You may forfeit your own walk. So how do we respond to God's pruning in our lives? I think the first thing is, don't be prideful. Tell one of your co-leaders that you're struggling. And I use the word co-leader specifically. It's easy to tell all these different people who you know about your struggles. But often they're too far removed from your situation to actually help you out. What about this one? This one's challenging. What about asking one of your close friends if they see any blind spots in your life? You willing to do that? Going to somebody that you trust is going to say what needs to be said to you and ask them, am I missing something here? Is there an issue in my life that you're thinking to yourself, I really wish that I could just speak into this area that I'm missing? I challenge you to do that. Do it this weekend. Another thing is, keep in mind that God is trying to make you more fruitful. He's not doing this to hurt you. Even though it's painful, he's not doing this because he's malevolent or sadistic. He's doing this because he cares about us. And finally, remember the times that you grew the most were the times when you said yes to God and his pruning. Recall back to the last time that he pruned you and you said yes to him. When you said yes, it was probably one of the most joyful times in your life. And it's going to be the same this time.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.